any case, I was asked to lead a discussion on Susie breaking scenarios in string theory. That's of course a very wide subject, but it certainly means that this has to do with an attempt to connect string theory to particle physics, which is one of the at least primary motivations which we had. Now in particle, so let me step back first and define the scheme and also define in some way what I really want to talk about, because this is a rather general statement. So first of all, I want to look at particle physics, and at particle physics at the moment we have something a lot of people believe, which is the gut picture. So we are thinking of a grand unified theory where somewhere in 10 to the 16 GeV there's a unification of the gauge interactions SU3 cross SU2 cross U1, and we have some SSM spectrum below that scale. So this is nice. A lot of people like it. Most people like it. It explains the family structure, for example, in spinors of SO10, etc. So this is what I actually want to assume in my discussion. Now there is, of course, some support for this picture, and this support comes from the evolution of the gauge couplings, mainly. So the evolution of the gauge coupling, and then you might also argue the seesaw mechanism and all these things also hints for a scale of 10 to the 16 GeV. Yeah, there's a scale, and there is, of course, also a desert. So there's nothing in between the MSSM and 10 to the 16 GeV. And of course, we also say guts need supersymmetry. So this is one of the main reasons why we still believe in supersymmetry. So that's the scheme which we have. And of course, we like this scheme very much, but you see, there's not so much support to it. You can make many models which explain the low energy data with a lot of parameters, and you lose the predictions. And so we still believe in it. Also, we believed in it even earlier, before supersymmetry, and it worked beautifully. And then within a certain time, people thought, well, it's gone. But then it was revived with the lab data. So now the question is, we are coming now to the LHC. And in the LHC, of course, we can either kill this picture or we can confirm it. That's what we, in some way, one of the ingredients would be supersymmetry. So if you see strong extended technicolor at a weak scale, then probably we will have a hard time of doing it. So you could kill it.
The gut is still so high.
Well, just let me, because this is just the introduction. So probably what you want to say, I'll say in any case. So you see, the one thing is, can we support it? That would be the question. So what actually should happen that we support this picture? And I would require that we give some a priori definition of that. Because we all know that after we have data, everybody will have his model arranged in such a way that it's completely consistent with unification, or whatever you like, if it's not really killed. Yeah?
So, question?
Yeah.
what would you say about proton decay? Should we have expected to see that already?
Yeah, not, you should. I'll also come to that in some way. So I think it would be good to now say, what would you think should happen at the LHC which confirms the gut picture? But so that's the second question. I don't want to be specific. But something like SO10, which includes SO5, SU5, and so forth. So this is the first question. And of course, this has a lot to do with Susie breaking. Yeah, because when we are looking at the soft terms which we find at LHC, assuming that we find them, then of course these soft terms can give us some information on the gut scale. Good. The next question is what does this have to do with string theory? Now, to do this gut picture, we don't need string theory. I think even, you see, when we constructed our first heterotic models in the mid-80s, this was the time which was in between the two gut schemes. We had beautiful models of free generations, Higgses, and all. The only problem was, that sine squared theta w was not 3 over 8, but 3 over 14. And we said, this is great, it's string theory, and string theory does not need to give you guts. And certainly it does not give you guts, and even in the heterotic theory, you have really to look hard to find a grand unified model. So there are very few of them. So string theory certainly rather would destroy the picture, but so we have actually this statement about the guts is a real bottom-up statement. It's not something which you would say. Of course, you could say string theory is the 8 cross the 8 and kind of things and everything, but when you look into more details, it's very hard to do that. Now, string theory, on the other hand, of course, should combine this with gravity. So this is what I think what is the role of string theory. So can string theory, in fact, take the gut picture, put it into a gravity picture so that everything is consistent? And of course, also string theory should give us a theory where gravity is consistently incorporated so that we understand gravitational effects in a way that we can rely that we know what is going on. So in that sense, I think that is what I wanted to discuss today. So the MSSM, I think everybody knows, I won't repeat what it is. So we are starting with the MSSM, and for a while we are assuming this gut picture, which if we have the MSSM, we would of course require that there is nothing up to 10 to the 16 GeV. If of course we add some particles, we could, you see, accommodate, but of course we would lose the prediction. So now we have to look at the MSSM. And I shortly want to discuss it because I want to set the scheme what actually one has to do when one breaks supersymmetry. So the MSSM, I would say, has two predictions. There are two problems. And there are four obstacles to SUSY break, to consistent SUSY break. Well, maybe this cancels and the four remain. Okay. Well, in any case. So the predictions are, first of all, the first prediction is that the gut scale is raised to 10 to the 16 GeV because of the existence of the gauginos. So this is more than a factor 10 above what you have in a normal one. So that is something which certainly helps a bit with proton decay, at least from the dimension 6 operator. And of course, it gives you sine squared theta w to be 3 over 8 at the gut scale. So that means 0.23 at the weak scale. So that's one prediction. Of course, that is why we are actually belief in the MSSM. The second one is that the mass of the Higgs, the mass of the lightest Higgs, is less than the mass of the Z boson at 3 level, which requires in some way that at the end we now, with the radiative corrections, which mainly come from this large top quark U-cover coupling, that M Higgs is less, I would say, than 130 GeV. You might discuss this in some way, but certainly this is something which is crucial for supersymmetry. So for example, if the LHC finds the Higgs next week at 160 GeV, then this might not be what you would like for a supersymmetric theory. So these are the two...
Theory, right?
Well, But that's what I, so let me talk about the MSSM, because I, you could give free lectures on this question. So then I come to the two problems. The one problem is called the mu problem. I guess I don't have to explain it. It's this mass term mu HH bar, which you can write down, which is consistent with all of the symmetries, and which is supersymmetric, and you don't understand why this is small. Which would be that MSSM scale is small because it is somewhere connected to SUSY breakdown. This is not protected by SUSY. So that's the first problem. The second problem, of course, you all know, is this this dimension four operators, four operator proton decay. And there, well, of course, this is solved by R parity. So we turn the problem into a virtue, and that gives us a stable particle, which is a dark matter candidate, and which, of course, is widely discussed. So these are the two problems. Of course, you would have to. So a lot of work has been gone into solving the new problem, and it's not discussed that here. Now come some of the obstacles. This, well, one had to learn this. You see, when supersymmetry came up, everybody said, now let's sit down and we have some kind of spontaneous symmetry breakdown. And well, after 3 or 4 days, we have a model and it works, everything is fine. And so that was not so easy. So then it even came to the point that some people said, okay, let's assume that supersymmetry is softly broken. We postpone this question in some way to the future, and we first work out what we have, and then we go. So there are these obstacles. This is why I wanted to stress these things. The first one was that the supertrace of m squared was equal to 0. So that means, at least when you had F-term SUSY breaking, but that's the essential thing. There's never been a model with correct D-term supersymmetry breaking. So that was the first obstacle, which meant that if one of the electron partners is heavy, the other has to be tachyonic even. So this was an obstacle. The second one was the Gugino masses. So Gugino masses need dimension 5 operators, yeah. So at tree level, you wouldn't get Gugino masses. So usually when you broke supersymmetry, Gugino masses were small. The third one is when you write down
F-term breaking scenario.
Yeah, so I guess the usual one would be that Gugino mass in the usual picture, you would write something like integral d2 theta, some f function which depends on some fields phi, w alpha, w alpha, yeah. And then of course, yeah. So you have, then you, this, the lowest component of this is the Gugino bilinear. You would have the f term here from the d2 theta. So you would have something which is f of phi times lambda lambda. And f, you know, has dimension 2. So this is dimension 5. So this is not so easy to get. Yeah. So at tree level.
String theory doesn't care so much about that. This
homomorphic. Well, we will see. We will see. You'll see. The third one is a bit more tricky. Maybe. So the MSSM has two Higgs doublets, H and H bar. And when you write down this theory as it is, with all the terms which exist, you actually get a U1R symmetry. So there's an additional symmetry. It's a symmetry where the two Higgses have the same charge. You can actually use it for axions and all these kinds of things if this is anomalous. So it has a U1R symmetry, which at that level is unbroken. And it, since it's an R symmetry, it actually forbids a Gugino mass. Yeah. Under the R symmetry, the gauge bosons are, of course, neutral, so the gauge enos are charged, so it forbids the gauge enomers. So this R symmetry has to be broken, because otherwise you don't get gauge enomers. It's not hard because the dimension 5 operators were just forbidden by the symmetry. So you say this is not a problem. this is not a problem because I break it spontaneously and that's it. But the problem is that this one leads to an axion. So that's actually a beautiful way of doing the Dyn-Fischler-Srednicki axion in supersymmetry. Okay, good. Good. So there's this axion. So in fact, what we need, this is actually, you see, this is something which I repeat again because it tends to be forgotten. It was forgotten once, it was rediscovered, and I think it's forgotten again. But in a lot of problems which have to do when you construct the models, it's this thing. And the third, the fourth obstacle is, of course, vacuum energy. Yeah, this is F squared plus 1/2 D squared, which of course is positive. So in I'm not yet in supergravity. So, but that is what you are well educated person. So you of course give me the next statement.
Just one thing in favor of this evidence.
Oh yeah, but I haven't broken supersymmetry yet, you see. So I have an axion if I want to break it, and the gauge enomers is, no. Oh, the positive, yeah, okay. Good. Well, it's suppose this is a TeV, so the cosmological constant is a.
You said you don't have supergravity, so you don't have gravity.
Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, good. Any case. So in order to make a problem, I need gravity. So this is, I think, now. So I think this is one argument at a given point why you went to gravity. So in this construction of models, of course, in order to avoid this one, you have to go to loops. And in order to do this, you have to do some explicit breaking of the R symmetry. So this became a bit tricky because you have to put in some ingredients. If you didn't put them in, you had an axion, you didn't realize it, and somebody else had to point out that in your model you have an axion. Then you say, oh, I make the axion heavy, as usual. But in any case, what we are led here to a picture where we in some way said, well, you see, supersymmetry breaking is somewhere in a hidden sector. It's far away. So for example, it's loop. It's given by loops, and the question of loops in some way solves this problem. It might solve this problem, so in some way. So we are led to a hidden sector. And then we had a hidden sector, so we had some observable sector. And we had some hidden sector. So the observable sector was the MSSM. There was a hidden sector, which was something else, and there was some mediation. So this was a nice way of solving the problem because you had nice words and this was, so in any case, it told us that this SUSY breaking is not so easy. Well, it is easy, but if you want to have a consistent model, you have in some way to go to some remote place. And that, of course, now leads to the situation that of this hidden sector. Now, there has been a lot of work on that. And in fact, when supergravity was considered, it actually was clear very fast, then in fact this solves all these problems. Well, of course, we know that this one is in any case solved. And well, actually, I suggested this gravity mediation, this full supergravity calculation for more than one chiral multiplet was not known yet. In fact, when this was known, it actually turned out that this n minus 1 times m 3 half squared. Well, you could call this n, where n is the number of chiral multiplets in the supergravity. Before, they had just worked out with one chiral supermultiplet, Kremer et al. This was complicated enough. You had this 20, 40-page papers to read, which were done in different notations on different pages, but in any case. And it was at around that time that Kremer et al. In some way found out that actually in supergravity, this super trace of m squared was no longer zero, so it actually allowed you just on the tree level to push up all the scalar masses from the fermionic masses. And also there was this m3 half. The fact that m3 half was non-zero broke this R symmetry. Yeah? So the axion, if there is an m3 half, the would-be axion, the R axion, would have become heavy. And it also would, since we had this question of dimension 5 operators, of course you would work, and we know that F over M Planck, yeah, where M Planck was the gravitational coupling, the supersymmetry breaking, that was of order M 3 half. Of course, we had this dimension 5 operators that, of course, gay genome masses would appear as dimension 5 operators, and that would solve all the problems. So this is, in fact, so this solves the problems. And if you have other schemes, you always have to ask the question, for example, how do I solve this problem or that problem, etc. Well, I think the fourth one, I think that at the end you will have some and we have some supergravity to fiddle it, but it will not be clear. Sure. There are no flavor-changing neutral currents. So this is, for me, an argument for a unified picture of soft terms at a large scale. But I will certainly have to worry in some way. But as I said, string theory is supposed to be give us a consistent theory of gravity, so I should in some way be able to compute this question, flavor change in neutral currents. And if I have a consistent theory which has a symmetry, for example, a family symmetry, which solves the problem, then within the framework of string theory, that should work. If I just talk about gravity, of course, I wouldn't know what gravity does, but that's why you gave me string theory in the title, so this solves that problem. Well, in any case. Good. Well, as Ralf said, I should give my opinion, so I give you my opinion. So now, the Susi breaking schemes which we have, can we distinguish? Now, we have schemes where M3 half is, let's say, much bigger than M soft. Yeah, there are schemes which are M3 half, which are of the order of the soft. So these are now the soft breaking terms.
Probably to go to there, but can one think of forgetting about gravity and doing Susi breaking without gravity effects and seeing that?
Well, the question is, why do you want to do that? I think, you see, I think there is a certain problem. You see, whenever you have, you are talking about dimension 5 operators. So you have to invent some new stuff, yeah, which fits somewhere, which is supposed to solve that problem, explicitly breaking the R symmetry. So that's what you have to do. If you want to do that, that's fine. But you wouldn't even have to do string theory for that, because this is bottom up. Yeah. So what would string theory tell you? Even in this case, a string theory will not tell me very much about supersymmetry breaking. I will just try to figure out what can happen and what cannot happen. But you see, I guess I've never seen any statement from string theory which tells us that this is the mechanism you have to follow and you can compute. So if anybody says your string theory makes a prediction, you should be very careful. Including, this also holds for me. Any case, so
wanted to ask a question about the vacuum energy.
Yeah.
Maybe can you elaborate a little bit, because I had the impression from the supergravity point of view, I mean, you solve the problem because you can tune this here.
Yeah.
So is it,
and that's all what I want to say. Maybe I was not too specific enough. The statement was, if I'm global supersymmetric, I have a theorem that the vacuum energy is large.
Yeah, but
I agree. But at the end, you have to, gravity exists. Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah. So if I have a vacuum energy, which is non-trivial, and I assume in some way that gravity exists, I have to worry about it. Yeah, it avoids that theorem. It tells us I can have broken supersymmetry with a vanishing cosmological constant. Whereas global supersymmetry, in that sense, tells me that I can have broken supersymmetry not with a vanishing. Broken supersymmetry requires positive vacuum energy. Now, whether this gravitates or not, that is a different question. I don't want to solve the cosmological constant problem today.
But how much of the other issues that you mentioned depend on this canceling of the experiment?
It depends. This is completely model dependent. You see, at a given point, you will have to work with a non-trivial gravitational mass in order to cancel this. Yeah? And then, of course, I don't even know with what this might even work with gravitational masses which are electron walled or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. So it might very well be that rather small gravitational masses could solve that problem. But at least this is a theorem in global supersymmetry, and you can tune it in. That's all what I wanted to say. They address the mechanism, but what that means, I don't know. They address the mechanism, usually in the case that we say we have some other sector, some anti-D3 planes, which I throw in the theory, which cancels the vacuum energy. So, but that might be even a phenomenological relevant question. But here I wanted just to say that this is...
Sorry, let me ask. Take a globally supersymmetric model and couple it to gravity, not supergravity, only gravity. Will gravitational interactions break, induce supersymmetric breaking?
Well, I think so. But why should I do this?
Well, my point of view is, if you go through without gravity, that thing has no meaning.
Yeah, well, listen, we have repeated this already 5 times now. I agree completely with you. Yeah? This is a minor point. Yeah? If you have solved all these points, forget about this. Yeah? You see, this is now... So, should I repeat it again? If of course, you have a supersymmetric theory, you couple it to gravity, the first step I would say that you couple it to a supersymmetric version of gravity. Yeah? Okay. So, that's what we do now, or what we did. Good. So now I'm more general, and I'm now looking at schemes. So these are, in some way, the free schemes. So, for example, if this... This would be, for example, an example here would be what is called gauge mediation. Yeah? So this would be a scale where the soft terms are much bigger than m3/2. Yeah? So this scale F would be much smaller than, so for this, typically you have the TeV scale, you would have this as 10 to the 11 GeV, this intermediate scale. So if this F that breaks supersymmetry is smaller, then you get larger soft terms. Yeah, gravitational mass is smaller than the usual soft terms, given that I always assume the soft terms are in the TeV range. Then here, this would be what you call gravity mediation, or dilaton, or whatever. Dilaton, modulus domination. So these are these words which appear here. And here an example would be, so this here that would be an example where at tree level, even in gravity mediation, you do not get a contribution. So this is, for example, there is something which is called anomaly mediation. So actually M3/2 can be even bigger than the TV scale. You could now ask the question, what is actually the allowed range of M3/2 for a consistent model? So, well, somewhere between I don't know, electron volts or Planck scale. Well, now, I argue that there is somewhere an upper limit on this gravitino mass, so that let's say M3/2 should be not much bigger, so it should be of order of 4 pi squared times M soft. Okay, good. You see this? Well, you all know what the no-scale model is. You all know what model. Because, you see, there's something what is called no-scale models. And no-scale models are such that at tree level, all the soft terms vanish, although the gravitino mass is whatever you like, 10 TeV. And then, of course, you might say, well, now let's increase my gravitino mass to whatever I like. And the soft terms are still small. And therefore, sorry. Yeah, okay. So, so there have been in the literature some attempts to increase this mass beyond TeV, even getting to the Planck mass. But I think this is a bit too much, because this no-scale structure, as I understand it, is actually a remnant of n equal to 4 supersymmetry breaking. For example, when you do a torus compactification from 10 to 4, then in some way you have this underlying n equal to 4, which of course is broken. And there is a certain tendency to have at a tree level still relations which are protected by n equal to 4 supersymmetry, which, however, when you then look at the theory, which is broken down to n equal to 1, is no longer a symmetry, and you would expect that loop corrections will break that symmetry, and so that in some way this loop correction will lead to a situation that, so you could say that M3/2 might be just bigger by a loop factor, so which I call 4 pi squared. Okay. So this is actually, when we look at the story as it evolved, when in the first time string theory was applied to these things was actually when the heterotic E8 cross E8 theory was constructed. And so E8 cross E8 became then broken to E6 cross E8. And this was perfect, because in some way this was where the MSSM was, this was where the hidden sector was, so you could have some hidden sector Gugino condensation, and this solves everything. There's the hidden sector, which is E8, so it was actually, it couldn't have been better, yeah? So it's, in any case. And there actually we had a situation. Well, since in talking, so now in the heterotic theory, for example, if we consider this one, we could have either a dilaton S or a modulus T, if you, let's say, have an overall size of the manifold and you have the dilaton. And so you could actually have something which was either dilaton or modulus mediation. In the simplest case, which was discussed at that time, one actually had dilaton, one had actually a modulus mediation. So Ft was different from 0, Fs was equal to 0. Yeah. And in fact, it led to a no-scale picture. because, in fact, maybe that is a good formula which you should remember, is when you're looking at gravitino masses, they are typically given by the F function, the derivative of the F function with respect to some field I, yeah, times Fi, summed over I. So where this F function is this gauge kinetic function which appears here. So in the heterotic case, in this case which we had here, in fact, as we know, F is S, yeah, this F function was S. Yeah, that was the dilaton. So we had Fs times Fs plus Ft times Ft. So Ft was different from zero. Yeah, that was different from zero in this case. But this was with zero, yeah, because the F function did not depend on t. And Fs was equal to zero. And so m a half vanished. That's this easy way to see. And it is, in fact, this no-scale structure. This also goes through for the scalar masses. But of course, for the scalar masses, the formula are more complicated. So this is easy. This is an easy way to see, because this is actually how you get Gagino masses. Yeah? And of course, in string theory, in some way, this is natural in the sense that we expect some non-trivial F function. Yeah? If we wouldn't have string theory, we would have some other theory, we would have invented such a function somewhere with some new scale, which gives you dimension 5 operators. So in fact, so this is in this theory, we actually had this no scale structure. If we would have dilaton domination in some way, in the heterotic theory, we would actually be led to gravity mediation. So in this picture here, if we took this picture seriously, if we would have that here, with modulus domination, we would have at tree level no soft terms. We would get it at loops, so this would be more in this picture of anomaly mediation. Yeah.
What is the
normal super potential? Are just killer potential not here? No, I'm just talking about this, the structure.
I'm saying when you get this solution that is not zero.
Well, that was this usual picture that you had some kind of Gagino condensate which canceled the H flux, and so you got this kind of structure. You got a no-scale structure, Ft different from zero. The problem was, of course, in the no-scale structure, you also had a flat direction along Nt. That was not solved in the heterotic theory. You would have needed more flux, but that is now the question of flux compactification in all its full detail. So you would need, that's the problem why in the heterotic theory, you would have to invent a few more fluxes to solve that problem, like going to half flat manifold. When you go to the type 2b, for example, this is easier because you have these two free-form fluxes. So if you addition have a Gagino condensate, you can fix all the moduli. And that's actually what I should discuss next. Just what I want to say, when you just naively look at this string models, in some way you have this non-trivial F, so you are thinking that this gravity mediation or even anomaly mediation might be realized, provided that there's no other source of Suzy breaking, which is, of course, much stronger. By definition, this would be much stronger and would completely dominate the soft terms. But OK. But that's, of course, something which I think will be model dependent. You would put it in. You would have to put some stuff below 10 to the 16 GeV. This might be in problem with unification. So you have to be very careful in order not to destroy this unified picture. So now the next thing was type 2.
You know, things were popular over the past 3 years, right? Trying to do Polonyi type.
Yeah, well, no. The story was when once gravity mediation was discussed, everybody stopped doing gauge mediation for 10 years. And then for reasons I do not understand, in the early 90s, all of a sudden people started to do gauge mediation. One of the reasons was that there was one event at Fermilab, which could be interpreted as a very light gravitino. Yeah.
Have you seen gravitino in a collider? A light gravitino.
Yeah, well, it was some missing energy with small, of course, Gordy Kane had another way of explaining it with a heavy gravity, you know. Yeah.
So there has to be more. Otherwise, it was.
But you see, if this event would have been true, by now we would have 10,000 or 100,000 of them. So apparently, it was a fluctuation. Any case. So then I wanted to talk about type 2b, which some people in the audience might know. So that was, of course, a new development where, well, this is, has to go with this name of KKLT, that when you look at this question, in the type 2b theory, you can, in fact, fix the moduli, except for the T modulus by fluxes. You add some kind of no-scale structure. Then you put in a Gaugino condensate. And the problem was that you got some ADS solution, vacuum solution, after that story. So there was this kind of thing. You had this flat direction, which you usually in some of the modular fields, you had this flat direction, which you lifted by these non-perturbative effects, and so you got some kind of picture like this, where you had some unbroken supersymmetry at low energy in ADS. And then, of course, this is not what we are looking for, so you have to suggest some uplifting. And this uplifting.
Excuse me, Peter, didn't that happen also in this scenario? When FS is zero, you usually get ADS vacuum.
No, at this level here, you were not so successful, so you were still stuck at the flat direction of the. If you add other things, you also get typically ADS scenario. And I think what one has to give credit to these people, that they really took that seriously and said, let's do it and see what it does. Because I remember when Prignoli and Ibanez did this Dilaton modulus kind of fixture, you looked at these models and they had some sine thetas between the Dilaton and the modulus. In some cases, sine theta should be smaller than 0.03, because otherwise you didn't have a consistent solution. And of course, the question was, you had to fine-tune the vacuum energy, and you assumed that. But you then have to ask the question, in fact, does that actually influence the breakdown of supersymmetry? Yeah, because is there something else? The something else which cancels the vacuum energy, is that now responsible for the breakdown of supersymmetry? So this is this uplifting, and actually what appears here is that when you uplift in one or the other way, there are several ways of uplifting. The simplest one is in this picture with anti-D3 brains. It actually leads to a situation that FT becomes non-zero. It is zero in this picture here. So T is this modulus which has to do with the size of the manifold. It's non-zero, but in fact it is suppressed. It's not M3, so it's smaller than you would actually think. There is a contribution which comes from the uplifting. This is the uplifting which one has here in the vacuum energy, which of course is proportional to M3/2 squared times M Planck squared in the vacuum. So when you uplift it here, you will have some Suzy breaking of M3/2, and you will have an F-term contribution which is suppressed. And actually, there is a suppression which is the log of M Planck over M3/2. So in this kind of models, what is very generic in this kind of pictures, that there is a contribution to Suzy breaking, which is given by M3/2, and there is another contribution which comes in some way from the T modulus, which is suppressed. So that would be the T contribution. And that's, of course, the contribution which then, this is one of the messengers. So it would be this FT, which mediates to the observable sector and gives you the soft terms.
And are you still within the gut picture?
Well, yeah. Well, I forgot about the gut, but I'm in a certain way assuming that this is all happened at the large scale.
In a dot extreme, you can calculate the value, you can break Suzy explicitly and say calculate the value energy. Can you have positive and negative values for the value?
Can you have?
Positive and negative values.
Well, in the heterodic theory, you have to, it's your own story. In fact, I would argue that there are some schemes, if you want, for example, to make a Dilaton-dominated theory in the heterodic theory, I think you would need a downlifting. So
I'm asking about if I break supersymmetry explicitly, like in with the GSO projection, I will have a vacuum energy. In that case, can I have both positive and negative values?
Yes, you can have both sides.
So, what is uplifting in that case?
I don't know. I haven't considered it.
So I don't see what's special about the uplifting that you mentioned here.
No. What is special is that this was the first example of our task.
No, I mean, the thought extreme calculation of the vacuum energy was done in the early 90s.
There's a tadpole when you do that. You calculate what you calculate in the heterodic stream at one loop. Is a vacuum energy that depends on moduli.
Well, I mean, in general,
it's a tadpole. So the whole question of vacuum energy means that there should be a stable vacuum.
Well, I can do it in two dimensions, in which case there's no
tadpole. Okay, that's good.
It's not hard to get either positive or negative vacuum energy from these various things, but in some sense, the difficult part of getting a consider metastable minimum is getting this upsloped piece of the potential that acts as a barrier that keeps it from running off to infinity.
Yeah. No. I guess that's of course. You see, I am talking about this specific scheme, which in some way is consistent within itself, and where you, in principle, can do these things if you.
In some sense, that requires a violation of energy conditions, and in the case that was nicely came out.
Well, now you could, of course, ask the question, can I do this uplifting more with some kind of super potentials where I have some additional fields, some Polonyi fields, which allow you to cancel the vacuum energy. But that's, of course, now something which is not really directly something which you easily find out in string theory. So this is why we still have this problem that we have no convincing idea why the vacuum energy is actually so small. Well, the only thing I want to stress is that when you do this kind of story, whether you do superpotentials or not, there is this suppression factor coming in for the F term, or whatever the relevant term which comes in. And the interesting thing is that when you, I think you have to put a square here, when you actually look at this and numerically evaluate it, I don't know whether now the square or not, it's 4 pi squared. So in some way, in this picture, we get something which we call the little hierarchy, which is the log of the big hierarchy. So it actually means, I think it's like this, but I have to look at it. So it actually means that this suppression of the FT is of order 4 pi squared, which is actually competing with loop contributions. Yeah? So there is something where you have two contributions now. It's no longer gravity mediation. Yeah, well, because in gravity mediation, of course, you would just have these three-level contributions and the radiative corrections would be subleading. Here, in some way, these things are of the same order of magnitude. And this seems to be rather generic in these schemes, whether you, in some way, uplift here or uplift there in these kind of things. It also has this nice feature that the moduli, so there is a kind of hierarchy in the same way that the moduli, the mass of the modulus is, so if I call this, this is 4 pi squared times m 3 half. And this is 4 pi squared squared times m soft. It also in some way increases this modulus so that it is not so light. This might sometimes solve some of the cosmological problems, which one has such a theory.
Are you saying that the gravity-behavior contribution is of the same order as the anomaly behavior?
Yeah, as I'm saying, this F term gets a small VEF, and this minimum, it vanishes. It gets a small VEF for the uplifting because the minimum changes a bit, but not too much. And in fact, this change is of this order because, of course, there's a well-defined quantity which appears here when you do the uplifting. So it's suppressed. And therefore, in fact, you can no longer ignore this.
The same factor also appears in this large volume compactification. The same suppression also appears in the large volume compactification by common.
Well, yeah, they in some way they found that out as well. Yeah. No, no. I think this is different because you see, when they first had this model, they had the gravitational mass equal to 10 to the 11 GeV, and then we came up with this factor, and they completely agreed with us that this factor appears. Then I asked the question: is O still around? No. Then I asked the question, but then your Gugino masses must be 10 to the 9 GeV. Yeah? I asked Fernando this question, Joe Conlon answered, and he said, no, no, our gravitational mass has gone down by now. It's 10 to the 3 GeV, or 10 to the 4 GeV, so in some way. So I guess this is rather generic, and it appears, and it is actually... It's more generic than you would have thought at the beginning. First, I thought, well, this is just this uplifting of entity-free brains. You do this, but it seems to be somewhere something which it's hard to avoid. Of course, you could create models where you avoid it in some way, but.
There is like some instant once you are too long, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah, well, so you uplift by an instanton or whatever. Well, it's just, well, yeah. You might find, it looks now in some way, of course, this is a completely phenomenological analysis. You assume in some way that your minimum, whatever you call it, has this one with the M3 half, which you like to have. And then you uplift it, and then you see it's the change of this. If you would uplift by a cosmological constant, per se, of course, this would be zero. Yeah, FT would stay where it is, but of course, then you would have done something which is violently non-supersymmetric. So this is something which you could not explain as some soft breaking in some way. So how long? Since this is a lunch seminar, I guess I can go ahead. So now, if you now assume that the only contribution, so the contribution which comes in these loops, is given by anomaly, is given by the beta functions, this anomaly mediation, this leads to something which we call the mirage scheme. So there is, in fact, what happens here is you have some kind of combination. So it's a combination of anomaly plus gravity mediation. And you get contributions here and here. And you can define an alpha, which is the mixing angle between gravity and anomaly mediation. And in fact, in the usual definition done here, this picture here, alpha is 1. So it actually means that they give somewhere a similar contribution. The point is that when you now look, for example, let's look at Gugino masses. So here we have, let's say, the scale, and here we have the Gugino masses Mi. Then typically in a grand unified picture, you would assume that you see such a picture. You start with a common gravitino mass, this is the gut scale, and you go to low energies, and then you get your masses. But now, in fact, in this scale, where you have mirage and when we have anomaly and gravity mediation, anomaly mediation actually splits up the fields at the large scale. And in fact, so there will be, you will not start at the same point, and you will evolve these fields. And in fact, they will meet at a given point. And this will depend on this mixing parameter alpha. The reason is, no. The reason is that when you let run these Gugino masses, they run according to the beta function. The splitting at the large scale is also given by the beta function, because that's the anomaly mediation. And so the running undoes this. And what happens is that they meet at a scale. So for example, in this case of alpha equal to 1, they meet at 10 to the 11 GeV at some intermediate scale. Yeah, if alpha would be 0, they would meet at the gut scale. That would be gravity mediation. If alpha would be equal to 2, they would meet at the TV scale. So actually, so there you would have a picture that they are actually degenerate. Well, alpha is a mixture of anomaly and gravity mediation. So for m a half, you have a contribution from m gravity and plus m anomaly. Yeah. So and this now this contribution I call, which is proportional to. So if alpha equal to 0. So now I have a parameter. I define a parameter which gives a mixture from this one. And this parameter is in some way the ratio of anomaly is of gravity versus anomaly mediation. So if alpha is equal to 0, it's gravity. If alpha is equal to infinity, it's anomaly. So this is the picture. So there's actually in this simple case there is this and this is so the Gugino masses meet at an intermediate scale, but nothing is happening there. There's no physics. The only physics which you have is at the large scale, at the small scale. This we call it mirage scale. And in fact it depends on this parameter alpha. In fact, when you see that since they come closer to each other, so then they evolve here again. Cluino becomes large, the others very less. So what you actually get phenomenologically is that your Gugino mass spectrum is more compressed. Yeah? For example, when you make alpha equal to 2, you will have degenerate, the Cluino mass and the Vino and the Bino mass at LHC will have the same size. If you make alpha even bigger, then the Cluino might become massless at a given point. I have some plots here, but since I'm not doing it on the computer, I cannot show it.
Can I just clarify? So you're saying it is not possible using KKNT like methods to get gut unification? You're saying they're not compatible?
No. The point is the following. The point is the following, that if you have this contribution from anomaly mediation, you will have at the gut scale a threshold which splits your Gugino masses according to the beta function. That's what is known as anomaly mediation. That's not new. So in an anomaly mediated scheme, you start from split Gugino masses at the large scale.
You're saying that's still unified, but Gugino mass is split.
Now, I call it a mirage scale because this is just a mirage. It's not a physical scale. You think there is something, but when you come closer, you see, when we could do experiments now with accelerators going up to 10 to the 11 GeV, so we would follow, we would measure this, and then we would say, when we come at 10 to the 11 GeV, all this new physics will pop up. Yeah, and in this case, we'll be schooled. So, and in fact, you can also do that in the simplest case. You can actually also do that for the scalar masses. The same thing happens. But of course, the formulas are more complicated. So this is the mirage scheme.
And the leap of the individual masses, the contribution scale, also the sign of the beta function.
The sign of the beta function, yeah. Of course, it is important that the sign for the SU3 is negative. This in some way increases the Cluino. Decreases the Cluino mass. Therefore, it doesn't get as big as it would become at low energies as you would think in normal gut scale. So I'm thinking that, you see, in some way I have degenerate supersymmetric masses for the Gaginos at 3 level, but then I have this split from the anomaly mediation which gives me this picture. So, okay, this was just what I... just to define the scheme. Now, so now the question, I'm coming back to the question which I asked at the beginning. Given LHC, what actually can we expect? So what actually will happen in these schemes at the LHC? Or the other way around, if LHC, let's say, sees some particles, what will that tell us? Will that in some way tell us something about the scheme or about unification or whatsoever? So we know, of course, that if LHC is a Cluino factory, well, if SUSY is that what we see at the TV scale, or if you see anything at all. But of course, it could be also the Kaluza-Klein excitation of the gluon, which we produce. And if we see that stuff, we would have to figure out, first of all, what it is. And secondly, we would then have to figure out what actually we can say. Now, the first thing I argue is that the Gaugino masses are the most robust results of a given model. Now, this comes from the fact that in many models you wouldn't even know how to give Gaginos a mass, and so finally, if you succeed in doing it, it will not have so many uncertainties. So now let's now see what we would expect at LHC if we have, let's say, unified masses at the Cran scale. If we don't have unified masses at the Cran scale, of course, then I cannot do anything, because then I can explain anything I like. So let's take gravity mediation. So this the simple scheme with, of course, a universal mass at the gut scale. So we will have the universal mass at the gut scale. Now, one thing one should say, that is, when we look at the coupling constant, so if you look at the evolution of the coupling constant, and they unify at the large scale, then the unification, then we have G1 squared to G2 squared to G3 squared is 1 to 2 to 6 at the low scale. So at the gut scale, they are the same. You evolve them to the low scale. You know how to do that, and you do it in the MSSM. It's 1 to 2 to 6. Now, if I now look at the Gaugino masses, we, of course, run like the coupling constant, yeah? At least at one loop. So gravity mediation, what do I expect? M1 to M2 to M3 is 1 to 2 to 6. So actually, that's what. So if LHC would see this, I think that would certainly support the grand unified picture. But of course, you see what you have to have. You have to have the unified Gaugino masses, and you have to also have the MSSM, and of course. You have to measure them. Of course, it would be practically, and if you assume practically, pretty easy to, for example, really measure also in the first 2 or 3 years the Cluino mass, and also maybe get an estimate of the mass of the LSP. Yeah. So if you, for example, so here this the Dino, yeah, this one here would be the LSP, and so we'll have a relation of the Cluino to the Dino will be something like 6. Yes.
So what you can tell from this is whether there's sort of a gut structure to the masses. But this, like, so you mentioned gravity mutation, but I could have had this entire, ever, like the LHC signatures would be the same for a gauge mediation.
Well, if you assume that your gauge mediation, yeah, is fine-tuned in such a way that it doesn't upset the gauge coupling unification, I completely agree with you. But why should I consider a complicated model when in a simple model that's the result? You see, for example, I agree with you. If you cannot distinguish the schemes. But if I would do gauge mediation, you see, I would rather, you see, there are potential thresholds for the Gauginos, yeah, which I have to set to 0 by hand. Yeah?
I'm just saying that what this
I'm completely
just emphasizing it's stronger for the gut than it is for the gravity.
Yeah. No. The question here I want to address is really, can LHC give us support for gut? Yeah. And that's certainly a simple scheme, but you can get it in a different way, but yeah. You're right. Good. So now let's take anomaly mediation. This is 3.3 to 1 to 9. But this is when you look at the beta function at the large scale, you run it down, that's what you get. So, well, the first thing you see, and that's actually true in many of the models where the Vino is the LSP, it has some kind of anomaly mediation structure in it. So here actually you have a Vino LSP, which is not so common. And in fact, the ratio of the Cluino to the LSP will be rather large. Yeah. So if you measure this, this would be anomaly mediation. That would really be anomaly mediation. Of course, you could also do it in gauge mediation. Yeah. But this would be. Now, of course, as you might know, anomaly mediation has problems with tachyonic sleptons and all that. So the scheme in itself needs some massage or whatever. But if this is found, I think that's a clear signal. Whether it's likely that this is found, I don't know. But you might also say, well, this tachyonic problems has to do with the scalar particles. Maybe I can solve them. And there are a lot of ways they are trying to solve it without interfering with the Gaugino masses. So these are the two nice schemes which you can see. So you would say, OK, good. So this is what you see in the simple schemes. But what happens if I now see, let's say, 1.3 to 2.5? You could ask the question, well, this is, of course, everybody knows this is mirage with alpha equal 1. Or if you have 1 to 1, 1 to 1 to 1, this would be mirage with alpha equal to 2. While I make this point, you see, this universal spectrum doesn't look very supersymmetric. If you would find that, everybody would say, well, this is Kaluza-Klein picture. Yeah? Yes. This actually tells us this Kaluza-Klein excitations of the photon and the Ws and the gluon, they all have the same mass, so they would pretty much jump on the fact that rules out supersymmetry. Well, it does not rule out supersymmetry, but in some way, of course, it now tells us that even when we have these simple schemes without inventing many parameters, we are still lost. Of course, now we could say we check the scalar masses, because in a given scheme, I can actually compute the scalar masses. And then I have to see what happens. And that is something. So we still have the scalar masses, which in a given scheme are well defined. And in fact, in this mirage scheme solves essentially the problems of the tachyon. Yeah? So in fact, I think the way to make anomaly mediation a good mediation scheme is mirage mediation. So you get the contributions, which removes the tachyons. Of course, you also influence the gauge genome masses, but that's what it is.
Can I ask a question maybe to both of you or whoever else wants to represent gauge mediation? Which is, suppose you measure everything except directly the gravitino mass.
Except
the gravitino mass.
Okay.
If you got the mass spectrum, how would we decide whether it's gauge mediation or some other gravity, anomaly, mirage? How do we actually tell from the spectrum?
Well, I guess if you are in a sufficiently simple model, you could make a case. But if you would do that, you see, for example, the question is when people talk about general gauge mediation, yeah? So like Nati Seiberg, yeah. So he agrees with me that there is no prediction for the gauge genome mass. Yeah? Of course, in a given scheme, and in this scheme,
gauge genome mass.
Yeah, well that's, because you see, the usual general picture of gauge mediation is that you have some super trace formula for the masses of the scalars, which go according to the charges, which are relevant for the breakdown. And when you look at this sum, then in some way you would say, this is a sign for the scalar masses. That's great, but that is not for the first 10 years of LHC, I would say. Yeah. So I still think that the gauge genome masses are in some way the most robust ones. I also agree that when you have the full spectrum of all the particles measured, that to some extent you might then go into models and try to see. But you see, these papers nowadays on the archive, they say if we have LHC and the ILC, yeah, then we could in a certain way break this degeneracy.
Yeah. What you're talking is in 10 years we won't know, no matter what, however good they
are. Well, we might know, but...
doesn't solve the CD problem, right? Like, if you just took generic quantum parameter space, you have misaligned unique phases of gauge genomes, so you're in bad shape. So you might hope that if there was gauge genome mediation, SCP tells you you're not at some generic point, but you have some more favorable scenario where it was like a gut-like structure already, because that would get away from the CD problem. But that's, I mean, there's...
The point in some way is... You see, it's not so easy. When you think about this, everybody says, oh, come the LHC, we'll solve our problems, yeah? So, well, of course, it means that we can still go on with this model building for another 20 years or so. And but in a certain way, I guess, I think even in gauge mediation, in some models which are constructed, of course, one is careful nowadays not to screw up unification. So one puts complete gut multiplets, and one also avoids thresholds. So what could happen in some cases that you have thresholds, not thresholds for the gauge couplings, but thresholds for the gauge genomes. That happens. And that is, of course, deadly for the scheme. Not deadly for the scheme, but for this kind of predictions, yeah? So you lose complete control, yeah?
There are lots of problems. If you don't have gauge mediation, you don't have the gut structure risk.
Yeah.
Many different...
No, but you see this thing here, this is in some way...
Just the one with D-term hypercharge contribution.
But you can get around...
I mean, you can't get around that, but if you just took a generic model, complete breaking masses, you get a one loop.
And presumably, there's also general mirage mediation with one more parameter, where you could vary the two rates of the masses.
Yeah. No, it's just, well, I don't know.
I was going to ask, but there's only one parameter, so there should be ratios that rule out.
Yeah, this is actually a point which I didn't make yet. The point is that the simple mirage scheme, yeah, has two parameters, yeah, is alpha and m3 half. Yeah, so this is much simpler than m sucra, because m sucra has four parameters. And when you look at the pictures, in fact, there is a point which is consistent with everything. So, maybe this is small enough a rule so that I can show you these pictures. So there are these constraints on alpha. Looks stupid, but maybe I draw it on the blackboard. So it's like this. So what do we have here? We have M3 half versus alpha. And then you have here something at 1.25. You have tachyons. You might call them tachyons. You might say electroweak symmetry breaking is, it does not work. Color is broken. And then you have here a region which is ruled out because of the Hlebb bound from the Higgs mass. And then you have here something ruled out because the stop is the LSP, which you don't want to have. And in principle, this range is allowed. And in fact, also alpha equal to 1 in some way is allowed. I would have expected it to be ruled out because it's such a simple scheme. And then, in fact, you can actually even work out in some way the contribution from. So the desired value which you want to have in this model when you have thermal production of dark matter, of the Beano. So this is something which, of course, is a strip now. Yeah. So if you are along on this strip, you are exactly right. If you are below, you have not enough dark matter. If you are above, you have too much dark matter. So it's a typical picture. So it's actually amazing that this works. The problem, and you actually see that if you have too much anomaly mediation, you're running in this tachyon problem. Now you can, next thing is that you can of course say, well, let's in some way remove this question with the tachyons independently, some modified mirage. Now, a modified mirage, it looks like this. Now, because you see actually the it's very similar here, yeah? But it is of course very different here because at a given point you start removing these tachyons and at large alpha, therefore you get some solutions again. But this is it is not on a color printer. But well, I have this piece, so if somebody is interested in these pictures, can be seen. So in that sense, in fact, this is amazingly, because when you know these pictures for M Sucra, when people want to accommodate this, you also have to be in some corners of the parameter space, which restrict models quite a lot. So in that sense, it's actually not so bad.
Just to get the picture here, the band you drew is preferred.
Yeah, the band is where it would, in this model, if the dark matter is the Beano with thermal abundance. So for example, if you would say this is alpha equal 1, yeah, then you would say there's still a solution, and it would mean that some M3 half is here. And M3 half, of course, you have to consider in this case would be something like 20 TeV. Yeah.
So the question I want to ask is, if you're below the band, there's not enough dark matter. So you can probably invent something to get other dark matter. Yeah. What happens if you're above it?
If you're above it, you would say, if this is exactly what the cosmology works, you would say it's ruled out. It's too much.
But if somebody else told you you're there, you would dilute it with what?
But then you might dilute. It's this cosmological question, of course, where you have to be very careful. But at that level, it would be ruled out above, it would be allowed below, and of course, it would be perfect there.
So now, assuming that you can measure the Gugino masses, still you can rule out completely the attributions if you don't find ratios which have.
Yeah. Well, there is this point. This has been discussed a lot now. For example, these compressed Gugino masses, of course, they are good for solving what is known the little hierarchy problem. Yeah, this question, why the supersymmetric scale partners are in TeV rather than at 90 GeV where the Higgs. And you see the driving part in this discrepancy is the Guarino mass. And if you make the Guarino mass smaller, that relieves that problem. It doesn't solve it completely, but at least it goes in the right direction. And also, I guess people have argued that with this smaller Gaugino masses, which you get here, you also might explain this 3% discrepancy of alpha at the gut scale or whatever. So, but that's of course something. If you make the Guarino light, in fact, you in a certain way. This goes in the right direction for this modification. So that's all I want to contribute to discussion. It's now up to you. So. Well, no, it's Joe is not around, yeah, because there's of course this suggestion. There has been at several instances an attempt to make the gravitino mass larger. The first one this happened was called the gravitino liberation movement, GLM. And it led to the result that the gravitino mass was equal to the Planck mass, and the soft terms were small. It did not survive. Then there is this tempting possibility that you say, well, all what I'm doing is gravity mediation. Yeah. So if at the tree level something is zero, yeah, there will be gravity loops which give me a contribution. So I'm actually computing now a gravity loop, yeah, for the soft terms. And if I do the computation of a gravity loop, which actually has been done, of course, what would you expect? You would get, for the soft terms, m3 half squared divided by m Planck. Yeah? That's generically what you would get, and you get it. And this is beautiful. This means that I can put m3 half to something like 10 to the 11 GeV.
Doesn't just an all-way mediation give a much, much larger mass?
Yeah. Well, so this actually was revived in Hojava-Witten in heterotic M theory. There was actually, these calculations were done with theta function regularization and all that. So, and this was computed up to 3 digits. Behind the decimal point, but the problem is that even in this case, you see, also in the first case, there is moduli mixing which kills this picture. Yeah? For example, and even in the first case, the no-scale structure, if you have your f function, which for example in the heterotic theory is s, yeah, we all know that there's a correction, a threshold correction, and this is something like epsilon times t. If you remember my formula, which I gave you before, it is this mixing, which of course gives you non-trivial results. And then anomaly mediation is another contribution. So all these loops, in some way, of course, they destroy the picture. And at the end, you end up with the 4 pi squared. Now, most recently, there had been also a discussion by people in the large volume scenario. Well, in fact, it was also suggested in some way that m3 half could be of the order of this 10 to the 11 GeV. So there was some cancellation of some terms. And well, lucky enough, Joe Conlon in some way wrote a paper also on it where he said that at least that there is a moduli mixing. And you see, also there, it was, of course, very crucial. It's very crucial that some of your f's vanish. And you have to make even sure that they vanish at the minimum of the potential. So if you actually do a loop, it might change the minimum. It might not just and that you have to avoid. And I think that in these cases, it's also now the statement. I don't think it is the tenable. Because this statement, of course, is this statement which makes large volume compatible with guts. Because the idea is that you say, oh, 10 to the 16 GV, so the gut scale is 10 to the 15, yeah, which is four orders of magnitude below the Planck scale, and then the gravitational mass then would be 10 to the 11. And of course, the soft terms would then be 10 to the 3.
But even knowing nothing about the extra dimensions, the anomaly mediated contribution is four-dimensional. So if you just tell me the F term to give that M3 halves, I can compute the anomaly mediated contribution and kill the idea.
Okay, do it. Because no, there is this paper of Bagger, Moroy, and Poppitz, which did this calculation in anomaly mediation. Yeah, and when you take this result correct, then actually there is a possibility of a cancellation, which goes beyond that of the usual anomaly. And that's what these people are exploiting.
So there's not a fine tuning to get that cancellation of the software? Because the natural mass would be F over M.
Yeah. Well, I think it's very confusing because I think the formula is correct of Bagger, Poppitz, and Moroy. But the Alvis, for example, claims that this is incorrect. So actually, the Alvis writes down a formula where a term is missing. And in fact, if this term is missing, then your argument would be generically correct. But with that other term, you might have a way of having a cancellation. Now, as far as I see at this moment, well, to get 10 to the 11, in fact, in the abstract of the paper, you don't read 10 to the 11, you read 10 to the 8. And this has to do with the scalar masses. But you know the scalar masses are usually a mess when you are starting calculating it. But this newest paper of Conlon, as far as I understand, it gives you some mixing of the moduli, which in fact also leads to a situation that probably you can enlarge M3 half, but only by some loop factor. This is what my latest, well, it would be nice if Joe might have gotten his plane or what, I don't know. It might be a good sign.
But it's tempting to use these so-called no-scale structures.
Yeah. But you see, I'm...
Something similar can happen to these.
Yeah, but that would be then, you see, that would be something beyond SUSY which solves the hierarchy problem.
Exactly.
So
that's
tendency to use these
It seems that...
Thank you.